And now for reading and writing and radio.
Veronica Gantz doesn't wear pants. Veronica Gantz doesn't wear pants.
The author of that taunt is Marilyn Sachs in the book Veronica Gantz. But have you yelled jeers at someone or had them yelled at you?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Gantz doesn't wear pants. Let's go on with that story, Veronica Gantz by Marilyn Sachs. They had just passed the fish store on Boston Road when they heard it. Veronica gripped Mary Rose's arm and whispered, "Keep walking." "Ah, oh, Veronica," Mary Rose began whining, "forget it today." But Veronica just gave her one look, "Shut up and keep walking." She slowed her pace and waited. Sure enough, it came again, louder and clearer this time. "Veronica Gantz doesn't wear pants. Oh, Veronica Gantz doesn't wear pants." "Peter Wedemeyer," Veronica said decisively. "I'll kill him." Peter was a new kid in her class, new in the neighborhood, too. He and she hadn't been properly introduced, she thought with a grim smile, and lately some troublesome things had been happening. Somebody kept throwing her coat off the hook in the clothes closet, and somebody had put a tack on her seat this morning. She'd had her suspicions, all right. Nobody else in the class would dare to tangle with her. They'd all been through it already, one way or another. But every new kid, sooner or later, had to be educated. The girls were easy. They'd giggle or whisper about her, and generally one loud slap in the face kept them in line. She didn't really enjoy fighting girls. They just stood there and cried. Boys were more interesting. Frank Scacalossi, for instance. He'd been interesting and harder to beat than anyone else. Probably what she ought to do, as soon as a new kid arrived, was right away give him a poke in the nose so there wouldn't be any question in his mind about who she was. Not that she really minded a good fight with all the trimmings, but some days it just was not as convenient as others. Veronica, you see, is a bully. I'll skip a bit till she catches Peter. She flew out from behind the car, dashed across the street, and grabbed Peter just as he was beginning to poke his head around the side of the truck and holler. In fact, his mouth was halfway open, and his beginning cry of "Ver!" was shouted, but never finished, into Veronica's grinning face. "Did you call?" Veronica inquired politely as she lined Peter up against the back of the truck and banged his head against it. Peter closed his mouth. His face turned pasty. This would not take too long, Veronica knew. "Well, here I am," said Veronica, banging his head again. A few more bangs, one or two pokes, and it would be over. But Peter kicked her hard in the shins and flew off into the sanctuary of the fish store. When I was in Todd's school, there was a school bully. His name was Vernon. He was a grade ahead of me, and he was as solid and square as a brick house. I can still see his mean slits of eyes and his lips pulled back into a grin with his teeth clenched together, rather the way an opossum looks naturally, if you've ever seen one, and what makes them such ugly-looking beasts. Well, Vernon picked on all the little kids. Just seeing him pacing towards us made our stomachs turn to jelly and our feet fly. I kept well out of his way, until the time he lit into my little brother. Now, I don't know what a knobby-kneed third grader did to get Vernon's sixth-grade attention, but when I saw that fight going on, an absolute rage made me forget all prudence, and I leapt into the fray. He beat both Craig and me up easy, but at least we got beat up together, and maybe neither of us got it quite so bad. There are lots of books or stories that have been written about bullies. Do you remember in Laura Ingalls Wilder's Farmer Boy, the school scene? Almanzo is going to school, and there are huge, big boys, bullies, who have beat up the teacher in other years, and Almanzo's father says to Mr. Corse, "They have driven out two teachers," he said. "Last year they hurt Jonas so bad he died of it later." Well, Mr. Corse, you know, used a bull whip on the boys and was able to lick them and keep order in the school. Beating up school teachers wasn't too unusual in those days. I wrote an episode of that sort into my own Taste of Spruce Gum, and I'm not copying Laura Ingalls Wilder there because this really did happen. The person that told me about living up on top of Shrewsbury Mountain described to me the scene where Albert had tried to beat her up at school. In the comics, Lucy, Linus's big brother, is a bully if there ever was one. You know a thousand examples, but here's one. Charlie Brown is talking to Lucy, who's standing there just looking out, and he says, "What's this I hear about you throwing Linus out of the house?" The next picture, "That's not legal, you know. He's part of your family. Legally, you can't throw him out." And then Lucy raises her fist. "Oh, yes, I can, and I did. Legally, a big sister can throw out a younger brother because she's bigger than he is, and he bugs her all the time, and she can do it, and I did it." And then as Lucy walks away, she says, "And if you're smart, you won't get involved." Charlie Brown looks out of the picture to the reader and says, "I'm very smart." But today I want to talk about three books in particular where the central concern of each is bullying. Two are by the same author, Mary Stolz, and one is called The Bully of Barkham Street, and the other is called A Dog on Barkham Street. And these two books intrigue me for a couple of reasons. One is the subject, of course. We're talking about bullying today. And the other is how they're written. Now, all books have what we call a point of view. Who has the author made tell the story? I won't go into all the various points of view there are in books, but you might think about it, and the next story you read, ask yourself, whose eyes am I seeing this story through? Whose body am I living it through? Who does the author want me to be? Well, in The Bully of Barkham Street, the author has told the story from the bully's point of view. You get to feel like Martin, to see what makes him tick, how it feels to be a bully. His main victim is Shrimpy Edward, who lives next door and who taunts him, as Peter taunts Veronica. Martin is trying hard not to be a bully, but Edward rides by on his bicycle in this scene. A voice that was behind him and then passed like a streak said, "Why don't you get a horse, Fatso?" Hearing that Fatso, Martin forgot everything, all his promises, and he became again in a wrathful upsurge the bully of Barkham Street. He took out after Edward, who could run fast, but not faster than a wild person 2 years older and stronger, and in minutes he had Edward flat on the ground, pummeling him and pulling his hair. "Uncle, say uncle," Martin growled through his teeth. Edward shook his head as much as he could with his hair clutched in Martin's fist. "You better, weird one, I'm warning you," Martin told him. "No," Edward gasped. Martin tightened his grasp and shook Edward's head like a mop. "Say uncle." "Uncle," Edward choked out at last, and Martin let him go, watching while the smaller boy slapped the dust off his trousers and started away. Feeling dissatisfied, not properly victorious at all, Martin shouted, "Don't you forget now, when I tell you to say uncle, you say uncle pronto." "You young bully, why don't you pick on someone your own size?" said a quavery voice. With a sense of being beset on all sides, Martin looked up and saw old Mr. Ekman standing on his porch, shaking a white fist. "Somebody ought to tell your parents on you," the old man yelled hoarsely. "Mind your own business, prune face," Martin called up and got a kick out of the look on old Ekman's countenance, which did, in fact, look sort of like a prune. Let's look now at A Dog on Barkham Street. Could you believe it? It's Martin and Edward again. Well, that's not unusual to have a sequel. But believe it or not, it's not a sequel. The story doesn't go on. It's the same story told to us all over again, but this time we're seeing it through Edward's eyes. Here's page 2 in the book. Edward's mother is Mrs. Frost. Mrs. Frost sighed. "Is it Martin Hastings again?" she said. Edward nodded. "What did he do this time?" This time Martin had chased him for blocks, and then when Edward was absolutely exhausted and fell down, Martin sat on top of him and pulled his hair and said over and over, "Uncle, say uncle." Martin was a big boy, and Edward not especially. It was an awful grinding feeling to be sat on that way, and though Martin hadn't pulled hard, it was terrible to have your hair pulled at all. Edward had held out as long as he could and then gasped, "Uncle," and was released. He got up shakily, dusted off his trousers, and walked away with Martin's voice loud in his ears. "Don't forget now," Martin yelled. "Whenever I look at you and wiggle my finger, you gotta say uncle. Understand, weird one?" Edward kept walking, not too fast, because that might start everything all over again, but without answering or looking back. He hated being called weird one almost as much as he hated the pounding, but there was nothing he could do about that either. Here we have two books telling the same story, pretty much, from the same point of view, from different points of view. You don't have to read one to enjoy the other. You don't even have to know that there is another. One doesn't come first. They exist side by side, and it makes for a kind of richness. They're not really the same story. We see the same events, the Wren House episode, the school program, Martin losing his dog, Edward's Uncle Josh coming with his dog, but of course they're different, because Edward and Martin have different points of view, different parents, somewhat different activities, different problems, but both books link on the problem of bullying, Edward at being bullied, and Martin at his unhappiness at being a bully, and particularly bullying that pest, Edward. Here's a couple more passages from The Dog on Barkham Street. He's telling his Uncle Josh about Martin and how he runs whenever Martin comes. And he wishes that Martin would get run over or something, and the uncle says, "Bloodthirsty, aren't you?" "No, he isn't," Rod said. "You just never saw Martin. He's mean and big." "Why is he mean?" Both boys shrugged. "Search me," Edward said. "Dad says because his parents don't give a hang about him. Dad says bullies pick on other kids, smaller kids, because they're mad at their parents, only they can't pick on them." "Don't his parents give a hang about him?" "Oh, I suppose they do, only they don't show it much. You know, it means something to a guy if he's in a play or something, if his parents come to look. Mr. Hastings never does. Once in a while, Martin's mother does, but she always yawns and she doesn't ever talk to anyone else. She doesn't ever talk to anyone around here, either, except when people go and ask her to tell Martin to cut it out." "Cut what out?" "Everything he does, practically. I mean, like I said, he picks on kids, and he sasses big people. Mr. Ekman gets red every time he sees Martin, ever since Martin was shooting arrows, and one went through Mr. Ekman's hat." And he goes on to say how Mr. Ekman doesn't like to be called Pruneface. And then in The Bully of Barkham Street, Martin is at the school program. He turned to see his mother, to wave to her and show her how he was one of the good ones this time, and found her yawning widely. After that, everything went wrong. He had such a feeling of being let down at the evidence of her boredom that all the fun went out of the evening for him. He wished he'd never suggested that she come. And just a second before, he'd been so happy. Endless as they'd seemed, only because he was anxious to get to his part, he had still been enjoying what the other classes offered. Now he sat hating it all. The longer they took, the more bored and tired of it his mother would become, and by the time it got to the part about Martin blowing reveille, she'd probably be sound asleep. He sat sullenly, convinced that everyone had noticed how in the entire audience his mother was the only one not interested enough to keep from yawning. I could read you the whole of both books, all the parallel passages and how they both eventually work out the bullying problem, but let's get back to Veronica Gantz for a minute. We're seeing that whole story through Veronica's eyes, and so again we're finding out what it feels like to be a bully. You've maybe guessed the plot. Veronica meets her match in little Peter Wedemeyer, the new boy, who can outsmart her. She simply can't get her hands on him to beat him up. The part that I read you ends when he runs into the fish store and she follows him in, and he manages to dump on top of her a whole wastebasket full of fish heads and fish guts and scales and things. And Veronica, of course, is furious, and she's never been fought with wits before, and so she has to use her wits, start using them instead of just her strength. All the book, she's trying to get Peter. Peter, of course, figures out that he can't get away from her forever. And so we have this passage towards the end. "I've been waiting for you, Peter," Veronica said, leering, and she reached out to grab his jacket. "Okay, boys, let's go," Peter shouted, and suddenly all three of them were on her, punching and butting and kicking. Veronica managed to free herself, and she shouted at them, outraged, "That's not fair, three against one." "So is it fair for you to beat up kids smaller than yourself?" said Peter. "Paul Lucas," Veronica shouted to him because her eyes were blinking nervously and she knew what a coward he was. "I'll get you for this." "No, you won't," said Peter, beginning to move in on her, "because from now on, any kid you beat up, the rest of us will get you." I won't tell you the ending. I will tell you that there's a sequel to this good book called Peter and Veronica. Well, what is a bully? In my own experience with bullies and reading about them and living near them or too close to them, there are some factors they seem to have in common. You keep hearing, "You big bully. Martin is bigger than everybody. Veronica is bigger than everybody. Lucy's bigger than Linus. And those boys in Almanzo's school, they're all bigger than who they're bullying." But have you ever known any little bullies? I think that there are some little bullies. And a bully is usually called mean. He uses his bigness in nasty ways. He beats up on those littler. But the bully feels picked on, too, as we discover from reading The Bully of Barkham Street and Veronica Gantz. When you see it from the point of view of the bully, we see his reasons. The little one thinks he's doing it just for the sheer joy of meanness. Here's this passage in Veronica where she's talking to her teacher about Peter. "I hate him," Veronica said between her teeth. "Why?" "Because he makes fun of me all the time. He sings funny songs about me, and he laughs at me, and he threw old fish bones all over me." "Peter Wedemeyer?" said Madame Nusanoff. "I can't believe that." "No," said Veronica savagely, "nobody believes it, because it's not the same thing being smaller than everybody else. It's easier being smaller. People are always sorry for you when you're small, but when you're big like me..." Well, we've all encountered bullies, and probably every one of us could write down a story. You heard mine about Vernon, and don't think that I haven't got others, but I'll go a step farther. I bet you that we've all been bullies, too. "Oh, no," you say, "not me. I'm a shrimp like Edward or Peter. I've never picked on anybody. They all pick on me." But can't we always find somebody shrimpier? Little brothers and sisters are fine targets, and then there's animals, too. Somebody bullies you, and you can't fight back, so you bully the dog or the cat. Maybe you don't hurt it, but you make it do your will. For instance, I've forced a cat to stay in my lap when it doesn't want to, just to feel my power over it. That's a kind of bullying. You see, adults can be bullies, too, like I was with the cat. And they can be bullies to other adults, as well as to kids and to animals. And bullying isn't just punching somebody in the nose. There are lots of ways of bullying without ever making a fist. There's a hidden fist of some sort, of course, for bullying is using power over another person or over another living creature in a nasty or insensitive way. So today let's write about bullies. Tell one of your stories. When were you bullied and why? Did you taunt the bully? Did you dare him or her to get you? Describe the scene, before, during, after. I find that I use certain words, sneer, swagger, strut. Be sure to include the bully actions and the bully language, as well as the victim language and actions. Did you and the bully ever make it up and become friends? Have you ever been ganged up on? Or did you ever gang up on somebody? If you dare, tell about the time you bullied somebody, all the ugly details, and why'd you do it, and how did you feel afterwards? Or you might remember that subtler kind of bullying, the one kind that we call psychological, when you bullied somebody without beating him up, or somebody bullied you without beating you up. What constitutes power over another person? And when have you used power in a nasty way over someone else without actually doing physical violence? And have you ever yelled or had yelled at you, "Why don't you pick on somebody your own size?"
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.